First of all, let me say, seeing the children go out today made me think that maybe all of us, given that we lost an hour's sleep, should have shown up in our pajamas and nightgowns. Growing up in my father's house, my dad always kept pennies either on his dresser or in a jar. Now, pennies aren't worth much anymore, but they actually were back then. Mom would talk about how they used to collect pennies before we were born till they had enough to go to the movies. Somewhere between 25 and 40 cents was the cost. It took twice that by the time I was headed off to the movies. It takes a whole lot more now if you want to go to the movies. I used to think about that saying that people used to use, save your pennies, or a penny saved is a penny earned. Those seemed pretty big pictures when I was small. I used to borrow pennies from my father's dresser so that I could buy penny candy off the grocery truck that came through the neighborhood, and in those days you could actually get two pieces of penny candy for a penny. You can't find that candy for a penny anymore. Now, never did I pay it back, and in truth, never did I intend to. I just didn't want to get caught. And it seemed, after all, so small, but I knew it was so naughty. Once I knocked over the jar and it shattered. You have to be very careful, I learned, when this happens. Otherwise, you're found out when you cut yourself. So I learned. I learned that you can get too focused on small things and it show up. And if you're going to pick pennies out of glass, you better be careful. I heard once a thief, always a thief, and that makes the local moment turn to a big picture with a great ouch. It's not true, but it stings when it's said to you and you are little. All the more when you realize that you can disappoint people and that they may remember. And then you hope they don't. But then they invite you to sit in that chair and think about it as you face the corner. I learned to dread that chair. Sometimes there you are in some small picture, penny candy, and you're caught up short and you have to think about a bigger picture. Do pennies mean more than I think? Do you want to be once a thief, always a thief? Or like now, I don't know about you, but for me, it has just been getting ready for tax season. I'm always trying to be sure that I account for every dollar so that I can lower my tax burden until my nerves get frayed. And it's time just to hand it over to the accountant. You may not know that clergy are treated as self-employed people, so we can count dollars that others can't. But then I have to remember, I am a post-depression child who believes that I am also my brother and sister's keeper. And paying my taxes is part of that, it seems to me, part of citizenship. I look for every out. But I believe in a caring society, like what saved my grandparents in the Great Depression when work disappeared and my grandfather had a government job, or what keeps my mom more stable with Social Security and Medicare, or what helps those who are severely disabled, like a friend of mine in her 50s who can barely move from arthritis. Helping the least is part of life, but I cannot always see the least, so it helps when someone out of sight is there in my stead. I like that part of my taxes that do this kind of care, and I want to carry my share. At the same time, I want to trim. And so there's the moral conundrum, and I face it every year at this time. Little pictures often block us from seeing larger pictures, I have to remember. And that is the insight that is in today's gospel. In John's gospel, we are having that temple story. People are doing their daily task of worshiping God, and their picture is less large than that of Jesus. We're early in the Johannine story. We hear this gospel right after the wedding feast in Cana of Galilee at the very beginning. It is the first of three visitations that Jesus will make to Jerusalem. We hear the Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem to the temple where he found people selling cattle and sheep and doves and money changers sitting at their tables. Now, the visit to the temple is a public moment for Jesus, and it goes to the heart of the life of Israel. It is Passover, that most essential of all feasts. And Jesus has gone to Jerusalem to observe the feast, though we've heard earlier, he's doing it very privately. It's normal that he would show up in the place of worship while there. I'm sure you already know that the selling and trading in the temple was in fact quite normal in the outer courts of the temple, as normal as, say, a spaghetti dinner on a Friday night to support the Appalachian work project in this parish. This area was designed for that purpose in part, and thus people could make the purest of offerings to God, which was commanded of them. Purity was of high value in the Old Testament. Only the best was to be offered to God, not unlike the care that we give, say, to the altar or to the flower and adornments of this space or to our tithes as we yield them over to God. And coins with pagan figures of deities were not allowed to enter the temple, for they would defile it with the notion that there was some other god. So to convenience travelers, they could change their coins into temple coins. Animals without blemish could be bought here so that a traveler might have something worthy, or a city dweller. There were, of course, fees, and perhaps there was extortion now and then. Prices were no doubt higher than raising your own animal. But worship was a sacrifice. And it was to offer honor to God, and thus it fulfilled the first and the third commandments we heard read to us from the Old Testament today. Or they helped curry favor with God, or offer some covering and absolution for a sin. So Jesus in John's gospel enters the arena of faith and worship, and you can picture it. There's this outer court, large and vast, where people can gather. There are dwelling rooms at the periphery for the priest. There are stalls established for the sellers. And there's a space even for the Gentiles, the non-Jew, that they can draw near and hope that God will hear. The inner court is quiet. There the temple proper stands, and before it the open altar of sacrifice. And within the temple itself, in its dark interior, the most sacred of things and vestments are stored and used for the behalf of the community. It is this outer court that captures Jesus' attention. A place fully focused on right now in the worshiper's life and getting what you need. And here this strange response takes place. Making a whip of cords, he drove out all of them from the temple, all with their sheep and their cattle. And he poured over their coins of the money changers, overturning their tables. And he told those selling doves, "Take these things out of here. Stop making my Father's house a marketplace." But it always had been a marketplace. It was designed to be a marketplace for legitimate business. It was conducted in the designated area, and it was essential to the support of the temple, just as our offerings today are essential for the life of this holy place and the enabling of what we seek to do here together. So what is he about? The disciples remember that zeal for your house will consume me. But where do they get that? That isn't something Jesus ever said to them. Well, you'll find it in the prophet Zechariah, where he foretold about the coming of the Messianic One. And he says, "And there shall be no longer traitors in the house of the Lord." And when would this be? According to Zechariah, it happens as the end of time is coming. So Jesus' actions then are not so much about anger as they are symbolic in the Gospel of John. For John, Jesus is announcing the coming of the day of the Lord with all its reckoning, with its setting things straight and right again. The time of God's fulfillment is right now, is the point the gospel is trying to make. For John, Jesus shows forth now as the Messiah, and it's only the beginning of his gospel. This is not angry, but a prophetic voice filled with passion. It is a symbolic act that points beyond itself to God's purpose. So here we are given a symbolic showing that Jesus is Messiah, but he is so much more. In the next phrase, he will reveal himself as temple, as the place where the word of God rests. "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." They do not understand what he's saying. So much is about to change in the way we see the heart of God and know how to reflect it back into the world. This is not a little picture. This is not pennies on a dresser or a jar broken. This is not the Ten Commandments with all their power to initially bring us to better behaviors, to invite us into moral growth, to act like little shards that wound our conscience when we do their opposite. This is the heart of God's love erupting into time and space and human flesh, a living temple where worship becomes our very breath. This is what this cleansing means to the Johannine church. We come to this sacred table to taste the bread and to sip the cup. We come to be overtaken and occupied by God and sent back into the world as an occupied space. In the end, God does not care about my taxes, my little corners, and my savings. But God does care if I'm part of a bigger picture of a just and compassionate society. Am I doing my part? Am I able to imagine a larger way of serving? Is the world better because I occupied a space and a time? What kind of big picture can I hold where my daily deeds add up and they actually matter to God? So it does matter when young people or less young people go off to Appalachia and repair homes and serve the poor and are touched by their hearts, as we heard last week in the sermon, because God's care is made tangible in houses, in hands, and in hearts. It matters that young people will take their first communion next Sunday and we'll learn that there is a taste to God's love and an energy that can flow through it and heal the world at our hands. It matters that we hold George and his family tenderly in our prayers and align ourselves to resurrection, love, and hope because it helps. It matters less that I stole the pennies from my father's dresser and his route to the movies, and more that my taxes are a caring expression, that my offerings of tithes, actions as an adult, become that care in the world. It matters many times when the living temple of Jesus' love draws our eyes to the big picture. And there it is that my little actions, our little actions, make sense. And sometimes we are right with God. We are part of the treasury of God's love, and so much more than a jar of pennies. And so we might pray, may our words rest in your word. May our hearts be moved by the divine heart. May our minds seek only your thoughts, and our deeds rest in your deeds. Amen.